Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Tuesday. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory. And whether you go the pre-owned route or whether you go the new car route, you have a great sales staff that's there for you and not just there for the sale. And it's all part of the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, along with a great service department that is there with the diagnostics, with the inspections, with all the routine maintenance. And it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. It is training camp day one for the Steelers and the Eagles. Both teams reporting to Latrobe and Novacare, respectively, today. First practices will be tomorrow. And we'll have Neil Coulong rejoining us, as he does each and every Tuesday, to talk Steelers. And the retired Hall of Famer Ray Didinger will join us at 4:06. Looking forward to having him back today. He's got a book signing coming up, too, in Lancaster. Of course, he's got the play Tommy and Me coming up in Hershey on August 18, 19, 20, which we talked about last time he joined us on the show. So we'll get into all that again. Plus, of course, what to look ahead for the Eagles side of things with training camp. But, of course, with Neil, we'll get into everything with the quarterback situation and with everything, all the other new faces for the Steelers and back in Latrobe for the first time in 2 years as well. There's some guys on that Steelers team, like Pat Freiermuth, who are going to be enjoying their first training camp at Latrobe as well. So we'll get into that and more with Neil coming up in the next half hour. And Thursday at 4:06, as we continue with Big Ten Media Days, Kevin Warren and others spoke today. We'll get into that in a second. We'll have Mark Wogenrich from SI.com, as it'll be Penn State's turn tomorrow. And we've got Sean Clifford speaking tomorrow. We've got P.J. Mustafer tomorrow, Jair Brown, and, of course, James Franklin, and also Dr. Patrick Kraft, a new AD of Penn State who just took over at the beginning of the month, is also scheduled to speak tomorrow following James Franklin's press conference. So we'll have all that reaction from Mark coming up on Thursday and, of course, tomorrow, too, once we hear from everybody. And then as far as Big Ten Media Days go for today, Kevin Warden started things off with about 20 minutes or so of remarks and then another 20 minutes or so of questions. I wouldn't call it anything real noticeable. I mean, there's a story out there that, yeah, the Big Ten may expand beyond USC and UCLA. But we knew that already. And he even said verbatim that we've talked about on this show, and Steve has harped really on this since all this conference realignment started with Texas and OU last summer, is the Big Ten and even the N, of course, the SEC, and Greg Sankey said this when SEC Media Days took place last week, that they're not going to expand just to expand. You know, it has to be done strategically, and we've gone through all those reasons before. What brands are you getting? How much money are they going to bring to the table? Are you going to lose money if you bring certain teams to the table? We talked about all that for the last several weeks, about the dynamics of all that and how that works. And Kevin Warren basically just kind of reaffirmed all that today. And that's exactly what Big Ten should do. I mean, it's as we've talked about before, it's the Big Ten and it's the SEC in the driver's seat now when it comes to the college football realignment. I guess the only somewhat interesting note from today was Ohio State's AD telling ESPN's Pete Thamel that, quote, you can't ignore the potential of a 16-team college football playoff that apparently is starting to gain some steam, although it hasn't been talked about formally yet. Now, if they go to 16, I guess that's fine with me. I know Steve has said 10 to 12. I have said 12. I think 16 is fine, too. That's probably as far as I would expand it towards. But as we're talking about college football realignment, I just don't know what relevance expanding the college football playoff is anymore, to be honest with you. Because once the SEC expands in 2025, once the Big Ten expands in 2024 with USC, UCLA, OU, and Texas in the SEC, that's just going to officially create changes again. And if we're heading the Super Conference route, we may not have CFP. Because it's been talked about that the SEC and the Big Ten maybe want to have their own sets of playoffs.
Won't pitch Cole. Stand to the IL.
Yeah, that just came down too. I knew there was something up with him. It wasn't just he needed rest.
You might as well just, instead of having an MY, put a C up there for cowards. All right, they just don't want to play the Mets. All right.
That is bad timing.
So what, you're railing on the playoff?
Well, I just don't think talking about harping on how many teams we need to expand the CFP to is relevant anymore, considering where we're heading. If we're going to these power conferences move, this may not even matter anymore, is what I'm saying. 16 sounds fine, but what difference does it make in a few years from now, ultimately?
Well, I think what will happen is the conferences will sign off on it and they'll honor the contract. I don't think that's not too difficult a concept to understand. If the SEC and the Big Ten sign off on it and agree to it, they'll honor it. Why wouldn't they?
Only because it's been talked about before that both conferences want to go to maybe their own playoff. At least they've explored that idea.
No, that's called posturing. Just, you know. Greg Sankey's mad because they had a 12-team playoff done, and he put a lot of personal sweat equity into it, along with Craig Thompson of the Mountain West and Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame and Bob Bowlesby of Iowa. Those four worked very, very hard in the concept, and it all got blown up for various reasons. Well, he's not happy about it. Well, I don't blame him. So he says, hey, heck with it. I'll take my ball and go, you know, and he'll posture with, I'll take my ball and go home, right? You know, from a guy that put a lot of work into it. Remember that. He put a lot of work into it, along with three other people. So that's why you're getting the posturing of it. But Sankey did say at his press conference last week he'd be for expansion. That's fine. That is, you know, he's just waiting to see what the model looks like. There's no difference, Matt, between 12 and 16. There's none. And it just means the top four teams would not get byes. They'd have to play. But the number of weekends it takes to play the 16-team playoff is exactly the same as 12. There's no difference. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'd be fine with 16 as well.
I mean, so that's not an issue. And today, Kevin Warren said he is in favor of expanding the playoff. In fact, he was emphatic about expanding the playoff. Okay. But there's a lot more to it than that. Oh, good. Oh, goody gumbo. This is a good thing. All right. I just got the Charleston Classic Times. It works out very well.
Yay.
That's good. Penn State's going to play Furman in the Charleston Classic in basketball Thursday morning at 11:30, and they'll play either at noon or at 2 o'clock on Friday. That opens the door for somebody to fly to New Jersey for Saturday's game. What do you think?
Sure.
Well, no, this one's personal because I'm looking at it from my travel point of view. In other words, they play Thursday, Friday at Charleston. Saturday, I'd have a football game at Rutgers, and I have to be back Sunday for the last game. This schedule means I can do it.
There you go. Okay. And at least it won't be that far of a flight, so you're good.
Well, no, Philly to Charleston is a direct flight on American Airlines.
Even better.
Dick and I have already talked about it.
Can you go make the short trip up the Jersey Turnpike and you're good to go for the football end of it?
That's why God created rental cars. All right. Sorry, I got sidetracked. Look, the commissioner said a lot of words today. And he talked about, and he wanted to get out his message about the initiatives and so forth. That they're doing. And that's part of what he does as commissioner. And that's fine with that. But when you start listening to all the answers about the stuff we're talking about, interesting stuff came out. We'll discuss that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
And regarding expansion, I get asked every single day, what's next? It may include future expansion. But it will be done for the right reasons, at the right time, with our student athletes, academic and athletic empowerment at the center of any and all decisions that we will make regarding any further expansions. We will not expand just to expand. It will be strategic. It will add additional value to our conference. And it will provide a platform to even have our student athletes be put on a larger platform so they can build their careers, but also that they have an opportunity to grow and learn from an education and from an athletic standpoint.
You might think the team in South Bend's attractive. All right, so...
You're right.
Again, that's what this... they're the biggest chip left in the game. And you're not going to close the door to Notre Dame. Okay? You're not going to. So you want to make a statement that keeps that door ajar. Hey, you want to call us? We're taking the call. Because... he talked about the ability to, quote, bring value. Okay? Well, Notre Dame would do that financially. And in a lot of ways. I mean, they would bring value. Boy, I got a lot to say about this, and we're kind of loaded with guests today. I got a lot of info I want to get out. The window, if you wanted to do it, there is a window to this. It's a little wider. It doesn't have to be done now. Notre Dame's contract with NBC doesn't run out to 2025. If you're thinking about, hey, if you need an 18th school, hey, how about Stanford? Remember that the Pac-12 contract runs out in 2 years. And anything that is signed would, of course, have a grant of rights to go with it. So there's a window you've got to work here that isn't immediate, but it is at least a window that is there. Because grant of rights, you know, doesn't figure in for Notre Dame, but it figures in for maybe somebody else if you wanted to couple teams together, keep numbers even. But there is a lot to unpack with what he said today. So the door's not closing expansion because 2 hours north of Indianapolis, there's a school in South Bend that's very attractive. Can you blame them? No. I don't. I've mentioned a bunch of times, it is the one viable chip that expands your financial platform. It makes everybody richer by being there and doesn't dilute the number. They're the one that can do that. I know people, they talk about the value of Oregon and Washington. There's no question they're valuable brands. But if the number gets to be so high, which it's going to be, that means anybody that's brought in has to make a high number even higher. And only Notre Dame is capable of taking a high number and making it higher. Washington and Oregon can take a medium number and make it higher. But can they take a high number and bring such value that TV networks want more? UCLA and USC are going to come in as full members. He made that point today. They will not have to go through a 7-year transition to full financial media rights. They won't have to go the 7-year transition like Nebraska, Maryland, and Rutgers did. There's a couple reasons for that. One, the Big Ten is currently in the process of a new TV contract anyway. When Nebraska came in, they were in the middle of a TV contract. When Rutgers and Maryland came in, they were in the middle of a TV contract. This TV contract is being negotiated now, and the USC-UCLA factor is now baked into the new TV contract. So the numbers that they thought they might get in April, which didn't include them, are going to be probably even greater now by including them. Thus, they should be full financial members when they get in. Because their mere presence is going to make everybody richer anyway. I've got a lot to unpack with what he said today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, so today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, by the way, with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a great service department that handles it all, routine oil changes. inspections, diagnostics, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummelsworth. Online at sunburymotors.com. All right. I have a lot to unpack on Big Ten Media Day. And I'm going to do that in the last half hour. From what Kevin Warren said today, from expansion to playoff to NIL to TV time slots to we're going to introduce new media partners, plural. Sooner rather than later. Thought that was interesting. There's a lot to unpack. We're going to get to that in the last half hour of the show. First of all, I think when it comes to like North Dakota State, you know, a lot of talk about Trey Lance, that I think, which is Neil Kulong's alma mater, they should name a building after him. Shouldn't they, Neil?
North Dakota State is the FCS.
Yes.
No buildings yet, but that's because their football team is a absolute powerhouse, cranking out legends every year. They don't have that many buildings. It's not that big of a school, so part of the reason they're FCS.
Well, yeah, I think they ought to name it the Carson Wentz Neil Kulong Fargo Dome.
I don't know if I want my name associated with Carson Wentz anymore. That's that one's kind of gone downhill, unfortunately. Kind of letting me down.
Yeah. All right, then we'll call it the Trey Lance.
Yep.
Neil Kulong Fargo Dome.
I'm good with that. Kyle Shanahan just said today we're moving on to Trey Lance now. Trey's time in San Francisco. We're excited.
Yeah. They got what, including the option at the end. They got 4 years to work with him, so at minimum.
Yep. Well, they drafted him for this exact reason. You know, he was going to need a little bit of a runway, and he probably still is going to need a little bit of a runway. But
you know,
the risk you got to take.
You know what's interesting about that is that he has played so little football, Neil, in recent years. Because I mean, the pandemic year in 2020, he played one game, and he actually didn't play all that well in that game.
It definitely was the worst game he had as a college player.
Right.
not even close.
But that's what makes it. He's a lot of natural talent, obviously, but he's to me a mystery guy. How do you look at him?
That's what you get with him. I mean, he was drafted on raw potential and on tools. You saw a lot of good things for him. And I had a lot of conversations with him because I saw him when he was a true freshman, when he first got on the field.
Yeah.
Just in one of the throwaway games. And it was like, oh, my God, this guy's an FCS player? You got to be kidding me.
Right.
I mean, he's clearly better than everybody else who's on the field. And this was a blowout against, you know, not a very good team. But even then, you saw it. And then he started the first game of his redshirt freshman year. It was a game played at Target Center or Target Field in Minneapolis against somebody who didn't belong on the field with him. I don't even remember who it was. But he absolutely dismantled him. He could run. He could throw. You could see the arm strength. He had what would look to be like a prototypical NFL quarterback size for his age. He was only 19.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that all year. I thought his decision-making, you didn't get a great sense of that. The big statistic for him was he hadn't thrown an interception. A lot of balls he threw that probably should have been picked off with you know, better competition. Not a huge deal, but you saw the potential. But you also have to look at the fact that he barely played.
Right.
So, you know, is he going to have a downswing? What's going to happen when he gets a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger? There were a lot of things in there. I didn't think he would go top three. I didn't think a team would trade up that much for him. I kind of thought he was going to be the 10, 11, 12 range, somewhere in there. But at the same time, when you see the quarterback that you want, and there are a lot of traits that he has that fits in well with what Kyle Shanahan wants to do. He's got good pocket mobility. He can read a defense. He can throw accurately on the move. Those types of things can be utilized well in Shanahan's system. It just takes a little bit of time to kind of adjust to it compared to what he was running in college. And you give him that runway, I think you have something to work with. I understand the consternation, though. I don't think he's going to be a top five quarterback this year, but He's big, he's mobile, he's got a good arm, he's a good student, and he's a good leader. You put all those things together, as low as the odds are of becoming a great NFL quarterback anyway, typically the best ones have those traits. And I think he's got that package already. You got to see how it'll develop. You know, he's still a kid. He's only 22, so he's got a long way to go. I hope he does well.
I think this is an interesting question. That's why I'm asking it. People listening may say that's a stupid question, but I think this is an interesting question. In a league that seems to want to know everything about you, is it more beneficial for your draft prospects with less tape?
Which position would we be discussing? I think quarterback.
I think almost any position. So, I mean, in other words, I got so much tape on him. I've seen all the warts to go with all the excitement.
Yeah. I think it's anything. I mean, it's obvious. Right? Trey Lance proves when it comes to the quarterback, less can be more, and on a good one, and on top. At the same time, though, I'm saying that when Kenny Pickett's draft stock went through the roof.
That's a good point.
Because he came back and put more forward. It's also specific. I will say this. If injuries are not a factor, if it is not an issue with the school, if it's not something of you know, perhaps a less savory manner that the player would go pro, it really just seems that teams would have more of a preference for a younger player. At the same time, I can hear Jim Nagy of the Super Bowl screaming about the value of having that All-Star week to put more film down against high-level mm-hmm. competition in a supervised environment, create more narratives for your game. I think it could work either way. I would say this. If I had a son who had a professional football career headed – you know, quickly to him, I would say get to the NFL as quickly as possible. There's no point in being in school. If you're that level of prospect, I don't see the value of going to college if you can pull in that kind of money early on in your life. You may as well give that a shot and, you know, hopefully it works out. If not, we'll figure something out. But I think teams respond better to a player who's 21 rather than 23. So the question is, how evolved is your game when you're younger? If it's evolved, if you have potential, if you have something elite about you, you'll get drafted. We've seen that time and time again. I was just having a long conversation with my brother, in fact, where good old Jarvis Jones' name came up.
Yeah.
You look at the opposite end of potential, of youth. An old injury history player who was at best a mild athlete, mm-hmm. but he had a ton of experience and a ton of film. I will, for the life of me, and you and I talked about this back in the day, for the life of me, I will not ever understand why they drafted Jarvis Jones at 17 overall. Right. There's nothing about that guy that was a first-round pick. Right. Nothing.
Right.
And the main thing that the Steelers went with at the time was all this college production. Like, I could rip that apart. Don't tell me your scouts don't see who he's going against, the manner in which he's getting these sacks. He's been in college for like 7 years, and he doesn't have a pass rush move.
Right.
He's not a good athlete. It wasn't just cold that day he ran the 40. He's a legitimate 4.9, 40 guy.
Mm-hmm.
He tested poorly in every regard. There's nothing exceptional about him. He's a fifth-round pick, from my opinion.
Right.
And along with that, not only did Jarvis Jones flat-out not work out in the NFL, but the Steelers completely overhauled their entire draft philosophy after that because of that. When you have a younger player who has elite athletic traits, you draft them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the tape piece of it is very important. I don't want to act as if that's not important, but when it comes to your marquee players, you've got to take athletes. That's just the way the game is played now. You've got to get guys that can make plays wherever they are on the field. And the Steelers, whether they've done well enough to justify what they're doing, they have drafted athletes first in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some validity to that. They've rebuilt their defense. They've got to kind of probably get into the offensive side of things a little bit better. But we've seen, you know, evidence of that to this point with this offseason. So I think if you have good tape and good athleticism, you should enter the draft. Otherwise, right. If you've shown quickly in your career that you have the athleticism and your tape is okay, and how about this? I'll point this out. George Pickens,
yeah,
not a lot of tape. Coming off an injury, enough tape, the right tape to say, you know, going is probably a good idea. And he's a second-round pick, not like a top 15 guy by any stretch. And he's probably, if things go the way that you think that they will, he's probably going to outplay that second-round contract pretty quickly. But it's still a decent chunk of money. He's still entering the league when he's a little bit younger. He's going to get paid to rehab whatever, you know, he has left to rehab in his process and be able to play in the NFL and get paid to do it. So I think, by and large, for the elite level playmaker guys, when you have it, go. You know, the NFL isn't. It only takes one team to take you, and it seems more often than not those guys get drafted.
Trey Edmonds, he's gone. I mean, so when you look at the Steeler roster going into camp, is the battle for spots 35 to 46, is that about where they are with this team? I mean, besides the quarterback thing, obviously.
That's a good question. I think what we saw with the Steelers, it was interesting, especially early in their draft. They had to get guys that could play. They needed to get guys they could get potentially 600-plus snaps to right away. They had massive holes to fill. They didn't have a running back last year. It was pretty obvious why they drafted Najee Harris where they did. They really didn't have a tight end last year. Needed to take Freiermuth where they took him. Kendrick Green, turns out that he's not really a center either, I don't think, but they needed somebody to play center. So you take Green where you took him. I don't want to say that they were Band-Aid guys. Maybe Green was to a certain extent, but overall, they needed to get guys that could play right away. At the very least, in Green, you took what's probably a dual position offensive lineman in the third round. That's not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not totally against that. You can justify that now with the fact that Mason Cole is probably very similar but better than Kendrick Green, or at the very least, he's more experienced. If you can figure out if Mason Cole can play center, perhaps Green is a better guard. Perhaps he's more of a reserve guard who needs a little bit of time to develop. But they've built themselves options for those 35 through 53 spots.
Right.
That's something they did not have at all last year. I mean, they almost were handing out invites to people to come in and play. Mm-hmm. And absolutely no depth on that team. Right. So they were able to work around that and build with it, and some excellent management and coaching, in my opinion, to grossly overachieve. To be where they finished. They answered a lot of those problems that they had last year. We'll see if it works on the field, but I feel like they brought in reasonable personnel to establish depth, to bring in starters that can play probably better than the guys that they were replacing. Their defensive line, as we saw by week 12, week 13, you know, to paraphrase J.J. Redick, they had plumbers and firemen out there playing for them at the end. And they added one in the draft. They signed a really good one in Ogunjobi.
Yeah.
You get Alu-Alu back. You retain Montrevious Adams. They added a ton of depth to that defensive line, and that was a major problem last year. They added some depth to the linebacking group. I think that there's value in doing that as well. They don't usually sign three cornerbacks in free agency. They did that. They loaded up with depth. I'm not saying any of these guys are all pro players necessarily, but they have quality NFL talent at in deeper spots on their team than they did a year ago. And that, to me, is really what the battles for 35 through 53 are going to be a lot stronger than they were a year ago. I'm not even sure there really were battles last year. They probably only had 44 guys. Yes. The other ones were added for whatever reason. They actually have a reason to compete. And have expectations for the players they keep at the bottom of the roster this year.
When you look at the explosiveness, you talked about athletes. How athletic is the Steeler team potentially when it's all said and done?
I think they've gotten better with that. I when I think athlete on a football team, I'm thinking the receivers and the cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure their cornerbacks are elite athletes per se. Obviously, they're going to be among the most athletic guys on the team, but relatively speaking, to their peers in the NFL, they don't have elite athletes at the position, but they're big, they're quick, they're experienced, and they have, I think Terrell Austin's done a great job with the Steelers secondary over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I think they have a tactical advantage in the overall balance of the players that they have at that position, at cornerback in particular, but their secondary as a whole. Minkah Fitzpatrick clearly is an elite level athlete. You've got that. Terrell Edmonds, as a player, might be up or down, but he's a great athlete. They have ways of being able to make plays on the ball in the air, and now they have depth at cornerback with solid, solid NFL players. Again, they're not Darrell Revis or anything in their prime, but they're solid enough that you can expect them to be able to do a thing or two when they're out there. As far as their wide receivers go, I don't think Deontay Johnson is a phenomenal athlete. We've talked about this a bunch.
Yeah.
He's a very good technical receiver. He has great feet. He has great balance. Some probably hand-eye coordination issues he needs to work out, but a very solid NFL receiver. Chase Claypool is an exceptional athlete. George Pickens is an exceptional athlete. Calvin Austin is an exceptional athlete.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing playmakers in, and they've got to find ways to utilize all of them to the best of their ability. I think they have the raw talent. I think they've been kind of hampered by a kind of a weak-arm quarterback the last 2 years, at least season and a half.
Mm-hmm.
By about week 11 on, I think Roethlisberger's career was pretty much over, and we could see that. We'll see what they do with a more physically capable quarterback. Might not be as smart as Ben, might not be able to see the field as well, but they really should be in a position to make plays down the field. And to be honest, they haven't done that for 2 years, longer, really since 2018 was probably the last time they were able to make big plays as an offensive unit. We just haven't seen it. I'm hoping what was obviously a concentrated effort at the wide receiver position to get young athletes on the field. I'm hoping they'll reap the benefit of that simply because these guys are better athletes. They're younger. They're not imposing size-wise, but they're very quick. They're very agile. They're fast. They should be able to make more plays. So I think overall they're more athletic. They have very athletic defense, and they have overall. Their front seven, however that works out with depth charts, they're very athletic. They have a lot of athleticism in that group. It might not be, Ryan Shazier, but obviously T.J. Watt's a great athlete. Alex Highsmith is a good athlete.
Yep.
Cam Hayward can still move very well. Montrevious Adams is a very underrated athlete. Chris Wormley's a good athlete.
Mm-hmm.
They have athletic guys up front. They'll be able to match up more defensively, I think, than they've been able to. And if they can stay healthy, they should have a really good defense. It's just really a question of getting them on the field and making sure they can be out there.
My friend, they deserve to, once again, name a building after you. Maybe not the Fargo Dome, but yeah.
No, I'm going to tell them you said that. The next time they call me asking for money, I'm going to say, where's my building? Steve said, build me a building. I want one.
And if you can donate money to them, they will do it. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, sure. Just write the check here. Yeah, that's probably how the conversation would go. But no, I'm going to try that, seriously.
I would go to the dedication.
I'll send you an invite.
It sounds good. Thanks,
we'll make this happen.
Thanks, Neil.